black man accused of raping a white woman. The men were hanged from a tower in the middle of the public square. The white woman who claimed the three black men raped her later admitted that her story wasn't true. But the damage was done and accelerated. Someone in Springfield even minted a coin.
On one side, 1906, Good Friday. And on the other side of the coin, it said the lynching of three niggers.
In the days after the lynching, panic spread among black residents, and thousands left the Springfield area, never to return. Father Berry's family was one of the few that stayed. Racial animosity continued for decades. And so, when after years of work in Eastern Orthodox churches around the country, Father Berry decided to return to Ash Grove and open his museum, friends cautioned him.
My family friends called me here and they said, you know, you better be careful opening up a museum in that little town. White folks have no life.
Despite that warning, he says the reception here has been warm. Townspeople even helped him clean up his family's cemetery, overgrown and almost forgotten for decades. The tombstone of his great-great-grandmother, a slave, is barely standing. Many other slaves are buried in unmarked graves here. A few years ago, Father Berry moved his family back into the farmhouse where his grandmother raised him. Nearby, he built this new church. It's no bigger than a single car garage. But within this small frame, he holds to his faith and his quest for racial harmony. In this way, Father Berry hopes to resurrect his hometown's lost heritage of black Americans.
I can look back at my ancestors and go, these guys didn't do it. They were slaves and children of slaves. And they were able to live their life and leave behind a loving legacy that people even today appreciate.
Father Moses Berry, and I live in a house that my great-grandparents built in 1871. My great-grandparents built that house, Caroline and William Berry. Their photographs are over here on this wall. I'll show you later. My great-grandparents built that house. My grandparents were born and raised in that house. My father was born and raised in that house. I was born and raised in that house. And now I'm raising my children there. As I would like to say, my children have flown the coop. My daughter just graduated from Mills College a few weeks ago in Oakland, California. And my son is always off on adventure. He's graduating from Ole Miss after being on an expedition in Antarctica for a year. So they've flown the coop. There are no more berries there except my wife and I. I'm third generation AME pastor's son. That's African Methodist Episcopal Church. My family has been involved in that church since the very beginning. My great-grandmother is the daughter of Nathan Boone, the granddaughter of Daniel Boone, and my great-grandmother. A funny story I have to tell you. When we first moved back to the country, they asked us to come to the Boone Rendezvous. And do you know what rendezvous are? Those are places where people get together and reenact a certain portion of history. And they had the dragoons, the soldiers that Nathan Boone was a part of. And they knew that we had all these things that belonged to Nathan Boone because he was also our hero. We have Nathan Boone's gun and cabinets and quilts from the Underground Railroad that belonged to my great-grandmother and quilts that Caroline and Marie made on the Boone Plantation when they lived there before the end of the Civil War. So they asked us to come and bring some items that belonged to the Boone family. So I brought some quilts, and a few other little things, that, you know, a few other items. But I bought some quilts, and I bought quilts that were made by my great-grandmother. I bought quilts that were made by my grandmother for her dowry in 1907, and I brought quilts from the Underground Railroad. And the only one I was really certain about was were the quilts from the Underground Railroad, because they had been on loan to museums all over the country. You know, even your Carnegie Mellon museum had this particular quilt there. So this is called a drunkard's path. So, you know, those were pretty well known to me. The other ones, I wasn't sure about. But I inherited them from my family, and I knew a little bit about them, so I lined them up. The ones that looked the oldest, I would say, belonged to my great-grandmother, and the newer ones, I would say, belonged to my grandmother. After all, who could dispute it? So I said, this one belongs to my grandmother, this belongs to my great-grandmother, and so forth. And there was a little white lady in the back of the room, and we later found out that she was 94 years old. And every time I would mention these quilts, she would say, no, don't think so. It was humiliating. Good Morning America was there. The Lieutenant Governor was there. Because this was the first time some of these items had been on public display ever. They were in our house in St. Louis. My wife and I had just moved there with the kids from St. Louis. We lived in a three-story Victorian house. And from 1907, it was a, you know, great old St. Louis house. And then we moved back to the country to a one-story farmhouse that my great-grandparents built. So we had all these things that used to be scattered out all over our house, and now they were in this little house. And this lady says, so everybody was excited to finally get to see these quilts. Because, you know, people would ask me to bring them to certain events, but I didn't want to. I didn't want to be public. I was actually sort of afraid of how people would handle my legacy, or how they would treat my family's tradition. And I was afraid also that maybe people would just sort of not respect it to the degree that I knew that some of these items were due, because they were connected to people who suffered and died in this country. So, this was a big deal, and this little lady was ruining my presentation. And every time I would say something, she'd say, no, don't think so. Finally, she said, why don't you stop lying? It was humiliating. The Lieutenant Governor was there, because they wanted me to open up this museum called the Dred Scott Museum in the capital, in Jefferson City, the capital of Missouri. So they were trying to court us, you know. And I said, what do you mean, ma'am? And she said, well, I won't tell you. And I said, well, how do you know? And she said, because they taught me how to quilt. As it turns out, this lady's mother came across the Cumberland Gap in 1890 in a covered wagon. And my grandmother was the daughter of a slave. So they were contemporaries who lived in this little town of Ash Grove, and they loved each other. And when she finally finished saying all that, she said, gotcha, because she was just giving me the business the whole time. And it worked. I'm glad she did. She said, this quilt was made by your grandmother. This quilt was made by your great-grandmother. This was from the Underground Railroad. I knew that. And this was from your great-grandmother, from the Boone Plantation. I knew that, too. And then she began to tell me all about my family's history. And I was with her. I had the opportunity and pleasure to be with her when she died, just only 2 years ago. So this particular quilt is part of the Underground Railroad. I'm sure you all know about the Underground Railroad, right? And they had certain quilts that they used that were called telling quilts. And they weren't quite as esoteric as some people make them out to be these days. But they had encrypted codes in there that taught the slave how to escape from captivity in the South to freedom in the North. This particular one was called a drunkard's path. And if you've ever seen a drunkard going down the road, you sort of stagger and go, wow, you know. And this was for the slaves to follow the staggered path, or the most indirect path, the prescribed indirect path. We'll come back to these items, these quilts in the Underground Railroad in just a little bit. But since I'm speaking about the Underground Railroad, I want to talk a little bit about the effort that we as a nation have made in order to bond together. You know, we have done this, we made this act together. The white people provided, as you know, the safe houses for the slaves to take refuge in, and the slaves were the ones, come in children, come in. And the slaves were the ones who took refuge in the safe house. Come in, come in, come in, come in. No, it's okay, bring the kids in. I want them to see something here. So at any rate, so you can see we've made effort together. We want to make sure that we continue to do that because as the great poet, the great African-American poet who I was raised on, Paul Lawrence Dunbar, when he spoke about the party. You familiar with Paul Lawrence Dunbar? Do you know the poem, The Party? It was about these seven plantations that got together. Thank you. They got together and they had a big celebration. You know, and all the slaves came there for the celebration, and they had all kinds of things to eat that he names off in this slave dialect. That's how it's written. Some of his poetry is written that way, and some it's not. But this is in slave dialect, and they had slaves from seven plantations, and they had all kinds of food, and everybody had their fill. And then after they finished eating, the fiddler got up so, quote, they could dance that dinner down. You know, in other words, they could help that, settle the food, And then he goes on to say, and the saints and the sinners were so mixed up on that floor that I'm sure that Gabriel could not have separated them if the trumpets had chanced to blow. So you see how much we are bound up as human beings, and even in such a simple poem as such a profoundly simple poem as Paul Lawrence Dunbar's poetry, you can see how we're all bound up with one another. My great-grandfather, Wallace White, was the first black man in the Missouri State Cavalry. They fought at Vicksburg. This is a picture of my great-grandfather and his wife, Daisy, outside of their canebrake. I would have had more pictures to bring you, but on our house, they had an archaeological dig on our property. And they just finished up Thursday. And I was running like crazy to get here by Friday. But they just finished this archaeological dig because we have a safe house on the furthest end of our property. And they used some of those pictures for the newspaper. But I'll share the article with you. Father, and he can maybe be sure that everybody has a copy of that. But anyway, Wallace White was freed from a field in Kentucky by the Missouri 5th Cavalry. He was 14 years old. At that time, they had a system that I like to refer to as the honor system. I'm sure it wasn't called that, but I call it the honor system. And the slave in the morning, come help. The slave in the morning would go to the field and put on his slave chains, and in the night he would come home and take them off, because that's how you really make a slave, because it's not enough just to seduce a person and make them obey your will. It takes more than that. You have to get their mind. You have to break their spirit. And so that was one of the methods that they used. They would put their own neck irons on, and they'd go to the fields, and they'd come back in the evening. So it was sort of it was terrorism. These are my great grandfather's neck irons. They go on like this. You saw in the movie. It always takes my breath away when it's on. This goes like that. And this goes over here like this. And it's recording for you. And this goes through here like this. And these are called walking ball and chain.
and they go through this little loop around the neck there, and that's how they transported the slaves. These were mean instruments that held the slaves captive, but they were also means by which their souls could soar. They did soar. They had the possibility of soaring. Because they were no longer citizens of this world. They were citizens if they had faith and hope and took advantage of the grace of God that was given to them. They had the possibility of being citizens of the world to come. And sometimes I'm sort of envious. They had no hope in this world. And I've got all kinds of hope in this world. I hope my plane is on time. I hope when I get back to the airport, my car starts. I hope that the kids, everything turns out. The children, I'm always afraid for them. Because they're so smart and so handsome. And I was neither of those when I was growing up. And so I don't think anything's going to work out for them. And so I've got all kinds of hope in this world, which is exactly the opposite of what I'm supposed to be. I'm supposed to have hope not only in this world, but in the world to come. And I'm supposed to have faith. So sometimes I'm a little envious of that. I wouldn't want to trade places. Although, I do sort of envy that sort of possibility of, making yourself a slave. Alright. These chains were not, this
walking ball and chains weren't to completely stop a person, but to slow down their mobility. This is my great. When we got married, my wife and I got married. And Esther was our bridesmaid. His friend from Oregon, his priest's wife. My mother gave us this lock. This belonged to my great grandfather. It's called a screw lock. Have you heard someone say to another person, screw you or get screwed? You heard the term? It's actually a Civil War term that means someone's going to get locked up. Because the padlock of choice from around 1810 to 1920s was called a screw lock. And you screw it in, and the lock comes open. Screw it out, and this becomes the key, and this becomes the padlock. Thus the term screw you. And even in some circles, which I'm sure you don't travel with, they still refer to the jailers as screws. You've heard people say that before. In those old James Cagney movies, when he refers to those jailers, he says, you dirty screws. That's why. It's because of the padlock. So now, when the children come to the museum, I say, now, the next time you hear someone say that word, now you know what it means, and they have no idea. In our museum, we have a particular quilt called a Dresden plate, and a quilt has patterns, and this quilt is called the